Welcome to North America's Back Porch. This is Nightside with Dan Ray. Call 617-254-1030 or 888-929-1030. The Newswatch never stops. WBZ News Radio 1030.
Hour number two coming up here on Thursday night, September the 1st. Wow. September, the year, is moving along. And, of course, we're on storm watch here in New England, all up and down the East Coast. Keep tuned to your radio in the next few days, certainly. These storms, sometimes they go in this direction, they go in that, and we'll keep you posted. We have the BZ Weather team, everybody, Eric and Barry and Pamela and Danielle, they're working on this thing throughout the weekend, into the weekend, that's for sure, and we'll keep you posted. We're going to change topics and welcome back to the program a gentleman who's been a guest before, Dr. John R. Lott Jr. He is an expert on guns and has written a book out just about a month now, The War on Guns, Arming Yourself Against Gun Control Laws. John Lott, welcome back to Nightside. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks very much for having me on again.
Well, we were talking off microphone a couple of moments ago, and always enjoy your books. This has been out for a month. How's the book doing?
It's doing well. I appreciate the reviews and the feedback people have given on it. So after you spend a few years writing something, it's nice to have the feedback on it.
How was it? Many people consider you, and I'm one of them, consider you the go-to guy when you're talking about the Second Amendment, gun control laws. How was it that you became so immersed in this issue? This is obviously your specialty.
Right. Well, it was by accident, in a sense. I had done a lot of work previously on crime, but I'd never really been interested in the gun issue. I'd been chief economist at the U.S. Sentencing Commission and taught a lot of classes on crime. I was teaching a class on mainly corporate and white-collar crime at the Wharton Business School. And I made the mistake of telling some students that we were ahead in the syllabus. And so a couple students came up to me after class, and they said, well, if you have some extra time, they'd be interested if I could go and talk about gun control a little bit. And I'd read some papers in the area, but, I assumed that there were better papers out there someplace. But to give a lecture on it, it kind of forced me to have to go through the literature, and I was just shocked by how poorly done the existing research was. I mean, this was back in the mid to early 90s, 94. And, when you're an academic, you do research either because you have a completely new idea, which is like about 95% of what I do, versus you think you can do a better job. And this was just one case where I thought I could do a lot better job than the existing studies. I'll just give you one or two things. All the previous studies were very small. I mean, you'd have somebody would pick 31 counties from the United States. How do you pick out of 3,140 counties, how do you pick 31 to look at? Or not one previous study had tried to even account for any impact of law enforcement on crime rates. I mean, I don't even know how. I mean, it just was shocking to me how poorly done the studies were.
So you're teaching at the Wharton School, which, of course, is the business school at the University of Pennsylvania.
Right.
How was it that I'm assuming you're teaching business courses at Wharton. Right. And how was the gun control, other than the students inquiring, how was gun control brought into the classroom initially? I'm fascinated by this.
Well, I mean, I was teaching a class on white collar and corporate crime.
Okay.
And so it wasn't a class on gun control.
No, I get that. So now, but I do understand the nexus now. I'm thinking, okay, I get the nexus, and sometimes I ask questions that I don't know the answer to, and I really didn't. So that takes you off in a direction. Now, you have taught at some great institutions, and I think you told me once that when you taught at the University of Chicago, you were there at the time that the president was teaching.
Right. No, we overlapped for 4 years.
And that and that, that he wasn't the friendliest guy, that when he met you, he sort of characterized you as the gun guy.
Right. Yeah, no, that's the first thing he said to me. Yeah, I went up, I introduced myself, and he said, "Oh, you're the gun guy." And so I said, "I guess so." And he told me straight out he didn't believe people should be able to own guns. And I responded by saying, "Well, you know, maybe we can get together for lunch sometime and talk about it." And he just kind of wrinkled his face, turned his back on me, and walked away. And that was the end of our first conversation. And that's pretty much the way our 24 or so interactions went while we were both there. He wasn't around a lot. You know, he only taught a few hours a week, and I only remember one seminar that he went to, academic seminar that he went to. But, you know, we'd run into each other in Hyde Park walking down the street if I was taking my kids to go and get pizza or, you know, some other places.
So as a constitutional scholar, his view of the Second Amendment was that people, average citizens, had no right to own a gun. He was pretty much of an absolutist on the Second Amendment in the reverse direction.
Right. Well, I mean, you can look at his record. It doesn't get a lot of attention while he was in the state legislature in Illinois. When he first was running, he signed a statement saying that he supported a ban on handguns. He later signed statements saying that he supported a ban on all semi-automatic guns, which would ban the vast majority of guns in the United States. And he supported legislation while he was in the state Senate there that would ban the sale of guns within 5 miles of any government property, any schools, and I can't remember what else. But, I mean, when you consider highways being government property and everything else, parks, I mean, you basically have virtually the entire country that you're not allowed to go and sell guns. I mean, yeah, there'd be some areas.
Even in a place like Wyoming, there's a lot of national parks in Wyoming.
Right.
So, that's interesting. Although I remember he was well known for his comments about people clinging on to religion and guns. That was a comment that he made. I think it was at a fundraiser, a private fundraiser in San Francisco, and he was talking about, I think, people back in Pennsylvania. That was something that was a bit of a stumble, if you will, during the 2008 campaign. Okay, when we get back, my guest, John Lott Jr., he is a doctor, PhD, The War on Guns, Arming Yourself Against Gun Control Lies. I want to get into some of the gun control lies as you see them. And I also want to encourage people who might disagree with you to call up and ask questions that they feel are pertinent. Dr. Lott is very clear, I think, on his writings. I don't know that gun control laws have been particularly effective anywhere in the country. As I said, Dr. Lott, for a long time, lived in Chicago, which is now an absolute free fire zone. Why the National Guard hasn't been activated on the streets of the south side of Chicago, we'll never know. But we'll talk about Chicago. We'll talk about it more broadly as well. If you'd like to join the conversation, you know the numbers as always, 617-254-1030, 888-929-1030. And whether you agree or disagree, I just simply ask you to be respectful in your conversation. You can ask the toughest question you can formulate. He'll give you an answer. Back on Nightside after this.
Nightside with Dan Ray on WBZ News Radio 1030.
Danny!
Do you think we could say a few words to each other this time?
I have the radio on.
Gotta get on the radio.
Nightside.
Nightside with Dan Ray. WBZ News Radio 1030.
My guest, Dr. John Lott, he has an economics degree. That is his doctorate from UCLA. He's taught at some of the most prestigious institutions in this country, University of Chicago, Yale, Stanford, UCLA, Wharton School of Business at the University of Penn, and in Houston at Rice. And he has developed, interestingly enough, an expertise on gun laws. His book, The War on Guns, just out for about a month now, available everywhere, certainly through Amazon, Arming Yourself Against Gun Control Lies. Okay, Let's hit a couple of these off the top, and then we're going to get to phone calls. The phone lines are already jammed, so I want to get to as many of these questions as we can. Should everybody in America, Dr. Lott, have, in your opinion, over the age of 18 or 21 or whatever, an absolute right to own a gun, a firearm? Or does the government have an interest in making sure that at least some people, i.e. convicted felons, people who are mentally ill, do not get access, legal access to guns?
Yeah, I mean, I think virtually everybody wants to try to keep people who would do harm from being able to go and get a gun. I guess the problem is people don't understand the way the current system operates, the way our background check system operates. Virtually everybody who gets stopped is a mistake. You know, when Hillary Clinton recently said that there are 2.4 million dangerous, prohibited people that have been stopped from buying a gun because of background checks, that's simply a lie. What she should say is that there have been 2.4 million initial denials, and that virtually all of those are mistakes. You know, it's one thing to stop a law, it's one thing to stop a felon from buying a gun. It's another thing to stop someone simply because they have a name similar to a felon from buying a gun. You know, the late Senator Ted Kennedy, for example, there were five times where he tried to fly on a plane where he was stopped because he had a name similar to somebody who was connected with the IRA that the government didn't want to fly. And that's pretty much what happens all the time. And the problem is it's particularly racist the way it's set up, because the people who have the greatest mistake rates against them are blacks and Hispanics. And the way it's set up, it's primarily poor people in those groups who are stopped from buying guns because of the current system.
So how do we solve that problem?
Well, it's easy. You go and have the federal background check system run essentially the same way that the federal government forces companies to run when they do criminal background checks on employees. The federal government, when it does a background check, all it looks at is whether it's a, quote, similar name. Doesn't even have to have the same middle name. The spellings of the names can be different. And their birthday. If a company had an error rate 1/100th the rate that the federal government has an error rate, they'd be sued out of existence. When a private company does a background check, they include the name, the social security number, the address, as well as the birth date, and that additional information dramatically reduces the mistakes that are made. And the problem is it's much worse now under Obama than it's been under the previous presidents, because at least under previous presidencies, they would have people that would go back and check. It may take a year, may take a year and a half, but eventually the government would usually come back and say, look, we made a mistake. Here's a piece of paper. You can take it in with you, and hopefully you won't be stopped the next time. But what Obama's done is he's removed everybody who did the double-checking. There's now not a single person double-checking for the mistakes.
So therefore, just so I understand this, so you are in favor of background checks, but you want effective and efficient background checks to weed out those who actually shouldn't have guns, but not cast a net so wide that, as you say, millions or hundreds of thousands of people have to assert their rights. And, you know, here in Massachusetts, essentially police chiefs can deny you for no reason at all the right to own a gun. And then the burden is upon the applicant to go to court to overturn the police chief.
Right. Well, I mean, that's even different than the type of background checks that we're talking about. Look, you know, as far as background checks go, I don't think there's much evidence that they reduce crime, but if they make people feel better and they're willing to pay for the cost of that, you know, sure, do it if it makes people feel better. But the thing is, and people who support these background checks could get them passed tomorrow if they wanted to. All they'd have to do is make a few simple changes. One, what we were just talking about, have the federal government have to obey by the same rules that it requires for private individuals, companies that do background checks. Two is who pays for them. You know, right now, to privately transfer a gun in Washington, D.C., it costs $125. That may not stop you or I or the president from being able to go and get a gun if he wanted it, but poor blacks may not be able to afford that. People who live in the high crime urban areas may be stopped from doing that. And so the question is, who pays? As an economist, I would say the people who benefit from the service should be the ones who pay for it, not just impose the entire cost on people who are buying guns. If you believe the background checks reduce crime, then it reduces it for everybody, not just for the person who's buying a gun. And so you should pay for it out of general revenue. I've brought up both of these points to gun control advocates for 15 years, and they will act like you're showing the sign of a cross to a vampire when you bring these points up to them. I'll give you one short, simple example. In 2013, when Colorado was passing its background checks on private transfers, I had some legislators come to me, and I suggested an amendment that would exempt people below the poverty level from having to pay the new state tax on transferring guns. With the exception of two pro-gun Democrats in the state House, every other Democrat voted against exempting people below the poverty level from paying this new tax. How many taxes can you point to where Democrats will fight tooth and nail against exempting people below the poverty level from having to pay?
Very interesting point. Let's get to some phone calls for you, if you don't mind. I'm going to start it off first. I'm going to go to Priscilla in Boston. Priscilla, welcome. You are first this hour with Dr. John Lott. Go right ahead.
Hi, hello. I just had a question, and I'm curious because you are an expert in this, what your interpretation of the Second Amendment is, because it always seems that so many different people have an opinion on what it means.
Sure. There are those who say that a well-regulated militia really refers to today's National Guard. I suspect Dr. Lott doesn't believe that, but that's a great question. Let's get how he views that the simple language of the Second Amendment. Go ahead, Dr. Lott.
All right. Look, I'm an economist. I've taught law schools, okay? But it's not what got me interested in this. What gets me interested in this is what saves the most lives. I mean, I can go and tell you what law professors who I've talked to tell me about the interpretation of it. But my own belief is that most people in the middle of this debate care about whether different rules are going to make us safer or not. And, you know, the background checks that we just talked about is a perfect example of that. When you pass rules that make it costly for poor people, the people who are most likely to be victims of violent crime, to be able to go and defend themselves, you can have increases in crime even if the law was very well-intentioned. So, I mean, we could get into a debate about the Second Amendment, but it's not my expertise, and it's not, you know, if you want to talk about safety or other things like that, I'm not saying you don't have a great question. It's just, to me, what motivates it is safety. Now, I will say this, and that is this election is going to determine what the Second Amendment means, because you have a case, you have two cases that Hillary Clinton has said if she wins, she's going to overturn, and those are the Heller and McDonald decisions. The Heller decision essentially struck down D.C.'s ban on guns. They had an outright ban on handguns, and they effectively banned all other guns for self-defense, because even though you could legally own a long gun like a rifle, if you put a bullet in the chamber of a rifle, just putting the bullet in, not firing it, was punishable by a felony for 5 years in prison. And so when the Supreme Court struck down Heller, it said it effectively banned any self-defense with guns, and that was too far. So when Hillary says she wants to overturn it by appointing a Supreme Court justice, and whoever appoints the next Supreme Court justice will determine the fate of it, because it was a narrow
5-4 decision.
Right. And Antonin Scalia, who wrote that Heller decision, is the one who died earlier this year. And so it's 4-4 right now. And so, you know, if Hillary appoints somebody, as she says, they'll overturn that. And that will mean governments can again ban guns completely if they want to.
Priscilla, you didn't get the answer to the question.
Well, no, that's still very, it's very informative.
But it's interesting. It's interesting because many of the folks on the left who like to refer to the Constitution as a living, breathing document, that changes over time.
They
become strict constructionalists and originalists with the phrase a well-regulated militia, contending that that essentially would refer to the Minutemen of the Revolution and their successors, which of course today would be the National Guard. They become strict constructionists and originalists on this issue and this issue alone. All right. Thanks, Priscilla.
Thank you. Have a great evening.
Have a great night. I don't know if you agree with that analysis, but I had to throw it out there, Dr. Lott.
Oh, I appreciate it.
617. Go ahead.
There's enough other things for us to talk about rather than the meaning of the concept.
Fair enough. 617-254-1030, 888-929-1030. We're talking with Dr. John Lott. His book, The War on Guns, Arming Yourself Against Gun Control Lies. Back on Nightside right after this.
With Dan Ray on WBZ News Radio 1030.
Danny! Hey, mind if I turn on the radio?
Just want to talk.
This broadcast is coming to you through the courtesy of
Nightside.
Tonight is going to be the night when you tune your radio to Nightside.
With Dan Ray.
Everybody wants to talk.
Are you listening?
WBZ News Radio 1030.
Dr. John Lott, the book, The War on Guns, Arming Yourself Against Gun Control Lies. Let's go to Steve in Cambridge. Steve, welcome. We're on with Dr. John Lott. Go right ahead.
Hi, John. I'm not a strong partisan, but I have a couple of questions, and I'll make them quick because I know a lot of people are on lines. What would you say to people after one of these mass shootings when, of course, fever for gun control mounts, and they say, well, there are just too many guns circulating, and it's unavoidable that they're going to fall into the hands of someone who is deranged, and we'll have something like what happened in Florida, where 50 people getting killed. How do you respond to that argument?
No, thanks very much. I just had a barber who's giving me a haircut just a week ago asked me the same question out of the blue, not even knowing who I was. But look, something needs to be done about these things, and I think, like the Orlando case, one thing people don't seem to understand is that virtually all of these mass public shootings take place in areas where general citizens are banned from having guns, these so-called gun-free zones. You know, the president, time after time, has talked about the United States as being unique in terms of mass public shootings, and that's simply not true. If you look during his presidency, during the first 7 years, and take the FBI definition of mass public shootings, the traditional one of four or more people killed in a public place, the United States had 25. The European Union had 25. The casualty rate for mass public shootings in the European Union was 50% higher per capita over that period of time than it was in the United States. And worldwide, the rest of the world has even much higher rates. You know, Europe, where you're having this high rate, a lot of it doesn't get attention. Few people would know, for example, that three of the four worst public school shootings have occurred in Europe, two of them in Germany. Europe already has all the different types of gun control laws that the president has talked about and much more. When he talks about things like background checks, expanded background checks, I wish a reporter one time would ask him to identify one of these mass public shootings he's talked about or any of the other ones that would have been stopped by these laws. But the one thing that would matter, the one thing that we see occurring time after time, is that these killers consciously pick places where people can't defend themselves. I have a whole chapter going through quotes from these killers where explaining why they do it. But I'll give you one that's occurred after I finished writing the book. A few months ago in Detroit, a father was concerned about his son's involvement with ISIS and told the FBI. The FBI put a tap on his phone, and they have this chilling conversation that they recorded about him explaining why he was picking one of the largest churches in the Detroit area to attack, and his top reason was that they banned anybody from having permanent concealed handguns at that church. And he said explicitly that made it easy for him to kill lots of people before anybody could stop him. He even went and found the distance between the nearest police department and the church to get some idea how long it might take also for the police to arrive. But since 1950, with just four exceptions, every single one of the mass public shootings in the United States have taken place in areas where guns have been banned.
By the way, just if I could mention, you talked about the four school shootings. I believe that the other two, there was one in Russia, if I'm not mistaken, and one in Scotland. Were those the other two, John?
Well, the Russia one, I don't know, it doesn't fit the traditional definition from the FBI. There were 385 people that were killed in that one, but that was Chechen rebels.
Right, right.
Who were fighting against Russia. So you could say that's a battle over sovereignty that occurred. But if it's merely like these types of terrorist attacks where the sole goal is to try to just kill as many people.
Was it Scotland?
It was Scotland.
Scotland.
Right.
One more question.
Go ahead.
And that is, gun control advocates always talk about how the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is prevented from studying this issue, and that's some kind of Republican conspiracy or something like that. Are you familiar with that?
Oh, yeah. No, I have a whole chapter in the book on that. It's basically a claim that started with a study that Michael Bloomberg funded, and it's completely wrong. What Bloomberg did was he didn't look at the actual number of studies in medical journals on firearms. What he looked at was firearm studies in medical journals as a percentage of all medical journal articles. And what happened is, it's true that fell, but that was not because firearm studies fell. Firearm studies stayed the same or went up, and in recent years they've soared. But what happened was is that medical journal articles in other fields exploded much faster. And so it's the share only fell, you know, as a share, not in terms of the absolute number of articles that were written. They've gone up. There's been much more research, and the federal government never funded more than 3% of the articles that were published in medical journals anyway. And they're still funding them in any case.
So this law that prevents the CDC from getting involved is non-existent, or?
Well, what it is it's a 1996 amendment to the federal budget that prohibits the CDC from using government funds to lobby on gun control issues.
So not study. It has nothing to do with studying.
It doesn't mention the word study at all. It just says they're not allowed to lobby.
All right, Steve.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it very much, Steve. Thank you for your call. Always thoughtful. Very appreciative. Very appreciative. Dr. John Lott, the book is The War on Guns, Arming Yourself Against Gun Control Lies. We'll be back with Dr. Lott. More phone calls on Nightside right after this.
Nightside with Dan Ray on WBZ News Radio 1030.
Quiet, we're on the air.
Have you all had your say?
On the air, what you say with Dan Ray? This is Nightside.
Nightside.
You want to talk?
With Dan Ray.
I've got to talk to him.
WBZ News Radio 1030.
Dr. John Lott is my guest. Back to the phones. We're going to go to Connie, who is in North Carolina. Connie, how are you tonight?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing great. You're on with Dr. John Lott. Go right ahead.
Okay. I have a couple questions. First of all, a statement. I am a mother of three kids ranging from 21 to 28. They all have their concealed carry license, and they all carry 24/7, along with myself and my husband. I have a couple questions for you.
I think she's on your side here, John. Go right ahead, Connie.
Oh, heck yeah, I am. And by the way, my husband and I both were military members.
Anyway, thank you both for your service. Go right ahead.
You're very welcome. Question I have for the professor is that I have been trying to find cases that Obama actually tried while he was a lawyer, and I have come up with nothing other than a few real estate closings that his name was on. Was he ever really a practicing lawyer? And also, it seems as if his tenure at the university was more of a part-time professor. What exactly were the names of the courses that he taught that gave him the constitutional scholar title? Because I can't seem to find anything that actually talks about the Constitution more than just, I think the one that I did find was the Constitution as it relates to race or something like that.
Right. You brought up several things. First of all, I'll just mention that there are now over 14.5 million Americans that have concealed handgun permits in the United States. And that doesn't even count the fact that there are 11 states where not just Vermont, which is next to Massachusetts, but also Maine, which is very close, that don't require permits. But there are 11 states in the country now that you don't need to have permits to carry. So, but, you know, as far as Obama goes, I'll say this, and that is we overlapped for 4 years. He taught a light load for essentially a part-time lecture. He taught one class each quarter that was there. And it was basically understood that when he was coming, it was going to just serve as a place for him to launch his political career, since he only was teaching 3 hours a week and didn't have any research duties to do. He was able to go and spend his time campaigning, and that's what he did, and that's what everybody knew he was going to do when he came to the school there. As far as his class goes, he didn't teach a regular class. He taught kind of a specialty class on the Constitution, which was, I can't remember the exact name, but I think you're right, it had something to do with race in there. And but it was just kind of a special topics class that kind of, wasn't meant to be a broad study of any aspect of the Constitution, but just topics that interested him.
By the way, Connie, I think I had read that the president and Mrs. Obama had both allowed their lawyers' licenses to lapse.
Oh, yeah. There's no sense working when you can get paid for doing nothing.
No. I understand that. But, I mean, I'm a lawyer, and I am not in the full-time practice of the law. At different times during my career, I've practiced pretty actively. But I would never allow my legal license to lapse.
Exactly.
I don't.
It seems as if the old saying, the prince has no clothes. It seems as if he doesn't have clothes. They give him this title of constitutional scholar when he really wasn't one. And it's a lawyer where I can't find any cases that he actually tried. It seems as if he did real estate closing.
Well, there are a lot of law school. A lot of law school professors who teach within the academy, within law schools, and are not necessarily active lawyers, but they by their writings, the old phrase of publish or perish. I'm sure Dr. John Lott knows that game a lot better than I do, because he has. Try to find some scholarly journals. I believe that when he was the editor of the Harvard Law Review, he did not author a single article, which is something that seemed, from what I understand, an exception. Let me put it like that. Okay.
He was groomed from a younger age, and his position was exactly where they were grooming him to be.
Fair enough. Hey, Connie, let me ask you: you're a regular listener of this program?
No, actually, believe it or not, I just dropped my middle son off in D.C. to start his first government job after college, and I've been driving back from D.C. to North Carolina. But
well, thank you. I hope you will lock us in your car radio. We're pretty easy to find, 10:30 on the AM dial, okay?
One more statement.
Sure.
I live in the last month, I've been going up and down the East Coast because of family obligations. And I have not seen hardly any, and I look for them, Hillary yard signs or bumper stickers.
That's kind of off our topic tonight, Connie. Let's save that for another night, and we can talk about that. I want us to just remain focused on what John Lott is here to talk about, okay?
Fair enough.
Good night.
Thank you.
Good night. 617-254-1030, 888-929-1030. Let me open up the BC box office for the second time tonight. You got to be caller number 9 at 617-931-1030. You will win a four-pack of tickets to the New England 300 NASCAR Sprint Cup Series race at the New Hampshire Motor Speedway Sunday, September 25th. Experience world-famous drivers up close. One day only. For info and tickets, visit nhms.com. Got to be caller number 9, 617-931-1030. At four-pack of tickets to the New England 300. You want to be in the show, you know the number, 617-254-1030, 888-929-1030. My guest, Dr. John Lott, The War on Guns, Arming Yourself Against Gun Control Lies.
Nightside with Dan Ray on WBZ News Radio 1030.
Danny, what is it?
Dan Ray.
Do you guys mind keeping it down? We're trying to have a conversation here.
Danny, what's going on?
Nightside.
BZ Nightside. BZ Nightside.
Every single one of us could be the Nightside.
WBZ News Radio 1030.
Congratulations to Rob Pedrini of Woburn. Rob won the four-pack of tickets this hour to the New England 300 NASCAR Sprint Cup Series race at New Hampshire Motor Speedway Sunday, September 25th. Experience world-famous drivers up close one day only. For info and tickets, visit nhms.com. Congratulations, Rob. That'll be a fun day. That is for sure. If you are a race car fan, let us get right back to the calls. Adam in Plymouth. Adam, you're on with Dr. John Lott. His book, The War on Guns. Go right ahead, Adam.
Hey, Doc, and hey, Dan. So I'm a gun-owning liberal from Massachusetts.
hey, rare species. Go right ahead.
They call me the unicorn, yeah. So you talk about safety, and that's your number one concern. And the thing that keeps going back in my mind, and when I talk to my family, and, you know, a lot of my family's anti-gun, and I just think the Second Amendment's pretty clear and pretty obvious in the fact that, you know, people, even if it's symbolic, have the right to self-defense and the right to a higher level of power than personal capability. And I don't think there's a lot of ambiguity there. But I think there is a limit to the power a civilian should be able to obtain. And I think...
Well, let's see if Dr. Lott agrees with you on that, Adam.
Okay.
That's a great issue. John, should everyone be able to own whatever caliber weapon they would like to own, or is there some limits?
This is more specifically, like, I'm sorry, like, it's not about the size of the weapon as it is more of, like, when you think of Sandy Hook, in 5 minutes, 154 rounds were shot. There were kids, you know,
right.
you can't compete against someone who can reload with 30-round magazines and X-level magazines.
Okay, let's get Dr. Lott's reaction.
Look, there are three different types of guns. There's a machine gun, one pull of the trigger, lots of bullets come out as long as you keep it depressed. A semi-automatic, one pull of the trigger, one bullet comes out, it reloads itself, one pull of the trigger, one bullet comes out. And then there's manually loaded guns where you fire and then you have to physically yourself put another bullet in the chamber. None of these mass public shootings in the United States, at least, involve machine guns. They all involve semi-automatic guns. Most of the guns in the United States are semi-automatics. You know, when people talk about, the AR-15s or what have you, those are functionally identical to any hunting rifle. You know, they fire
absolutely
the same bullets with the same rapidity, doing the same damage. And, you know, when people focus on these guns, you know, the response is, why should you ban guns based on how they look rather than how they operate? If you want to ban all semi-automatic guns, at least that would be a logical thing. But I think the problem is that civilians benefit a lot from having semi-automatic guns themselves. In the sense
absolutely.
That, okay, now the thing about the magazine size that you have, what most people don't understand, I guess, is that magazines are trivially easy to make. They're just a box with a spring in it. And so if you were to go and ban, you know, magazines of more than 7 bullets like New York tried to ban, or 10 bullets as you had
Massachusetts,
during our assault weapons ban that we had in the United States from 1994 to 2004 had a ban on magazines that carried more than 10 bullets. It's simply not enforceable. All you end up doing is making it so that the law-abiding civilians are the ones who are going to be affected by that, just like, you know, a lot of the different types of gun control laws that you have. So if you have a mass public shooting someplace and you have civilians that have concealed carry, the civilians who have concealed carry, they're just going to have the bullets that are going to be in the magazine that they have for their gun. They're not going to bring extra ones along. The thing, I have a chapter in the book that looks at the characteristics of mass public shootings and relates it to the number of people killed. It's not the magazine size that affects that. The big thing that affects the number of people killed in these attacks is the number of guns that these people bring with them. And that's an incredibly difficult thing to go and try to regulate. I mean, you're going to have it so that people can only own one gun.
Yeah. Adam, I hate to do this to you, but there's been one other call that's been on almost for half an hour. I'd like to give him a shot, too, okay?
One thing something about that?
No, Adam, I'm out of time. I want to give another caller about a minute.
Adam Lanza had six empty minutes.
Have a great night, Adam. Let's go to Steve. Steve in Mattapoisett. I want to get you in. You got a little less than about a minute. Go ahead.
Thanks, Dan. Great show as usual.
Thank you, sir.
Is John aware of this unilateral decision, if you could call it, by our own Attorney General, Martha Coakley, who de facto banned the sale of any lookalike, anything that looked like a military weapon? I'm a competitive shooter. I can't even buy a match rifle anymore. And I think this ban this decision or ruling, whatever it is illegal. It was outside the court system, outside the legislative system. And
let's see if Dr. Lott is aware of it, if he wants to comment. This is a relatively new development here in Massachusetts. I'm sure it will be challenged in court. Dr. Lott?
No, I mean, I've heard of it, and it fits in with what the previous caller we were talking about there. It just doesn't make much sense to me to go and ban guns based on how they look rather than how they function. And, and I agree, it's going to be challenged in court. She seems to have gone well beyond what the powers are that she had. So, but for some period of time, it's going to be more difficult for people to go and get certain types of guns for self-defense.
Steve, try get this book, The War on Guns. I think you'll like it a lot, Arming Yourself Against Gun Control Lies. Thanks. I want to get
Thank you, Steve. Thank you both.
Have a great night. Kelly in West Roxbury, we got less than a minute left. What can you do with it? Go right ahead, Kelly.
Hi. Grew up in Boston, always hated guns, moved to Texas, found out what they were like, had a great respect for them, and noticed a direct correlation between gun ownership and road rage.
So you see more or less road rage in Texas?
Significantly less.
Significantly less because you're concerned the other guy might have a gun. Great point. There's a deterrent factor there. There's no doubt. Kelly, thanks. You got the final comment of the hour, and I really appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Good night.
Have a great night. Dr. John Lott, got to have you back. The phones always light up. The book is The War on Guns, Arming Yourself Against Gun Control Lies. I'm looking forward to reading this thoroughly because we have lots of conversations about guns on Nightside over time. Thank you so much for taking your time and being with us tonight. And I'd ask you to stay there. I'd like to thank you off air privately, okay?
Sure. No, thank you very much for having me on again.
You're very welcome. Available Amazon.com, hopefully bookstores near you as well, if you have a bookstore near you. But Amazon.com, The War on Guns, Arming Yourself Against Gun Control Lies. Back, we're going to talk about Princeton's banning the word man. We're going to have some fun with this right after Dawn of the 10.
Look out in the street there. You know what you don't see? My car, because I had to sell it to pay the lawyer I hired when I got busted for drunk driving. Know what else you don't see? My girlfriend, who decided that a guy with no car and no license and no money was no fun. And hey, you know what else you don't see? You don't see me leaving for work in the morning, because I missed so much time with court and everything that I got fired.
Drive sober or get pulled over. Paid for by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.